15th of July, 1933. Having finished off everything I left last night and made the necessary farewells, I set off about 10 o'clock this morning. Mum packed me up a little lunch, enough to last me till tonight. I went the usual route to High Beech, but turned off before reaching the Robin Hood. Thence I proceeded to Waltham Abbey and Waltham Cross, along the main road as far as Broxbourne. It pelted hard with rain at Waltham Abbey, and kept on with some fair spells while I passed through Little Berkhamsted to Hatfield. Here my cape had dried sufficiently to enable me to take it off, but I have kept my leggings on so far, 4 p.m, in case I get any more rain. I just missed Hatfield and kept to the Great North Road, which doubtless I shall be seeing again more than once this fortnight, for a little. Then, turning left, I passed through Wheathamsted and reached Luton at 3 o'clock. I pressed forward up the Dunstable Road, turning off before reaching that place, and am now sitting by the side of the road leading to Houghton Regis, having just completed my lunch. Since leaving Hatfield, I've had no rain, but daren't risk taking off my leggings in case. I don't suppose I shall go much further before I put up for the night. Mum and Dad are well on the way to Claydon by now. My cyclometer before I started read 2,422 miles. I've done 45 so far. At about 5:30 this evening, I sent the first postcard off to Mum and Dad, and at 6 o'clock, I fished out the handbook to see about putting up for the night. I could see nothing in my direction except at Bedford, so I continued to that town and fixed up at a refreshment house kept by an old couple by the name of Cook, and the address is 39 Tavistock Street. The rooms seem all right, and they made me comfortable by providing a wash and a tea consisting of bread, butter, lettuce, and a glass of milk. 16th of July, 1933. Slept like a log. Woke up at 7:30 and got up just after 8. Had breakfast with a couple of other CTCites and set off at 20 to 10. They charged me 4 shillings for the bed and breakfast and 6 pence for the tea. I found the wind had changed when I got about 5 miles north of Bedford as I turned west into Northamptonshire. I went via Thurley and Bletsoe to Sharnbrook, about the prettiest little village I have struck so far, then through Odle and Harold to Lavendon. Here I turned right to Yardley Hastings, where I took my first snapshot of some gates to a private park, and kept along the Northampton Road almost to Denton when I turned left to Hackleton. Soon after leaving this, I struck a by-road to Piddington, and judging by the number of roads round about, thought I should be able to make Courtine Hall, but it proved there was only one road leading out of Piddington, and that was the one I came by. On the advice of a yokel, I turned off the Northampton Road at a sign marked to Preston Deanery and Quinton. At first, I had my doubts about going along it, as it seemed to be the private entrance to a house, but after passing through one or two fields, the road being good all the way, I reached the road passing through Road. I turned off this again for Blissworth, and then southwest to Toaster, however that may be pronounced. Up till now, I had the thunderclouds chasing me, and their approach seemed threatening. I stopped at a CTC restaurant at Toaster, and had some rabbit's food and bread and butter washed down with ginger beer. They didn't give me much, a sort of Lyons's portion, and had the cheek to charge 9 pence. We had a little thunder while I was there, but not much. I therefore set off again, but scarcely had I passed Althorp, when the rain started to pelt. I took refuge beneath the entrance canopy to Wappenham Station, on a tin pot single line running between Banbury and Toaster, and didn't it rain? The thunder was nothing compared with the rain. It lasted about 30 minutes. By this time it was getting towards 6 o'clock, so I girded my loins and set off to Banbury, and arrived there shortly before 8. I am now writing at number 10 North Bar at that town, and I'm fixed up for the night. It seems very pleasant here, but judging by the look of the place, I should say I'm going to be charged a pretty high figure in the morning. It's a sort of small hotel, and the handbook says bed and breakfast from 4 and 6. Now I must write to Mum and Dad and get the postcard in tonight, though I don't suppose they'll get it tomorrow. Whilst posting the card, I had a stroll around the town. There is a remarkable looking church made of some yellowy red stone with a curious round tower. I don't think I have ever seen so many red brick houses before. 17th of July, 1933. I slept well and was called at 8 o'clock and had breakfast at 5:30. I settled my bill, they only charged 4 and 6 after all, and set off at 9:30. I thought I'd go to Stratford-on-Avon, so I set out along the main road, climbing most of the way and against the wind, till I reached Sunrise Hill, a nasty piece of work descending at 1 in 6.5 with an S-curve halfway down. I managed to get down safely, and after plugging away for just over an hour, I reached Stratford somewhere after 12 o'clock. I wasn't at all disappointed with the town. The homes were mostly half-timbered and in the Tudor style. The thing that spoilt it was the Shakespeare Memorial Theatre, which, from the outside, is an eyesore. I stopped and had lunch of cold beef and salad and bread and butter, and what I needed most of all, some water. I drank a pint right off and succeeded in getting rid of another pint afterwards. Whilst at Stratford, I formed a plan to go down the Avon Valley, cross the Severn at Gloucester and into the Forest of Dean, and so work my way up the Wye Valley. But when I tried to get to Evesham, I found I was facing a strong southwesterly wind, so after a few miles, I turned northwest through Wixford to Ulster, another of those sesters. Toaster, I find, is pronounced toaster. Thence I continued on the Birmingham Road through Wootton Warren to Henley in Arden, where I turned off for Warwick. There is no doubt about it, these country lanes of Warwickshire want some beating. They are, for the most part, straight, and the gradient is slight and fairly even. I've no idea exactly how I went, since a good few of the villages I passed were not on the map, but I worked my way up somewhere near Kenilworth, intending to get to the Coventry Road and so through to Nuneaton. But I saw a signpost to Meriden, which is supposed to be at the centre of England, and as it was on my way to Nuneaton, and not a town, I turned off for it. By the time I reached it, a little after 6, I was about fed up, at least as regards cycling, so I had some tea and fixed up for the night. It seems a pleasant spot, but it is on the main Birmingham-Coventry road, so the traffic is pretty bad. The weather today has been dull, but I've had no rain, though it has looked pretty black in some parts. It is strange what a difference the direction of the wind makes to one's enjoyment. I was most miserable when fighting against it this afternoon, but when it was behind me, when I cut across towards Kenilworth, I felt so good and sped along so quickly that I thought towards 4:30 that my watch had stopped. 18th of July, 1933. I had occasion to regret that main road. It kept me awake for a long time. The traffic continued to pour along both ways throughout the night. However, I got some sleep and didn't wake up till 7:15. I had breakfast at 9 and got off soon after 5:30. I went north again through Filongly and Astley to Stockingford, where I turned to avoid Nuneaton by going over Hart's Hill. And it was a hill too. A mile or two afterwards, I reached Watling Street, the old Roman road, which I followed for about 6 miles before I turned off for Tamworth. Tamworth isn't so very large, and there are some quite nice spots about it. I believe I saw, though I cannot be sure, the pit head gear of a coal mine on a far-off hill. If that is so, then that's the first coal mine I have ever seen. I had a good drink at a drinking fountain and went along the road to Ashby de la Zouche, being more attracted by the name than anything else. It's not such a big place, and in fact is quite pleasant. It is in very fine surroundings. From Ashby, I took the road to Derby and passed over several pleasant spots and managed to secure some snapshots of the varied scenery. As I entered Derbyshire, I came across an old viaduct that must have been a mile long. It was mostly built of loose stones, somewhat after the style of the loose stone walls on Dartmoor. Soon after this, I reached Derby town, and I never want to go there again. The main road was all granite sets and tram lines, though I must admit it is the first time I have seen trolleybuses and trams running together. I left Derby at last, taking the Ripley Road. This was a long climb, and the road, I should say, had been very recently made up. To get into Ripley itself, I had to walk up about 500 feet within 1/2 mile. There were plenty of coal mines hereabouts. I did not fancy the address given in the CTC handbook for this town, so I decided to try Belper. I had a good 3-mile glide down into this place and got fixed up at the Waverley Tea Rooms in Church Street. I retired about 10 o'clock. 19th of July, 1933. I got up at the usual time, 8 o'clock, having slept well. The traffic noises were actually less, although it was rather near Belper Station.
And there were plenty of trains thereabouts.
I breakfasted at 9 and was off at 8:30, having purchased another roll of films. The existing one had been bought at Woodford, Essex. I travelled along the main road to Matlock at a nice, easy glide and had only to change down to bottom gear twice, and even then for less than 100 yards at a time. Soon after I left Bakewell, I met, going in my direction as far as Buxton, a police sergeant from Southgate, London, who was on tour with his service bike, also a Hercules. We had a very interesting conversation and kept together till we reached Buxton. There was a very nasty climb to 1,300 feet in 2.5 miles to Taddington and a quick descent to 300 feet the other side. But the scenery was wonderful, marvellous, gorgeous, I cannot describe it. I always thought Devon wanted a lot of beating, but Derbyshire has it beaten 3 times over. We entered Buxton soon after 2 o'clock and parted. I had some lunch and drank another quart of water. It's a very dear place. I had to pay 1 and 2 for 2 poached eggs on toast. I climbed north from Buxton to Hayfield, not much of a description for a very industrial town. Then came 2.5 miles solid climb and 2.5 miles descent into Glossop, which I shall remember on account of the cobbles and the clogs. I had an address in Glossop, but didn't think much of the place, so I decided to carry on to Bamford. To do this, I had to climb about 1,000 feet in about 4 miles, and when I was halfway up, didn't it begin to rain? Begin, it kept up, and the wind blew hard too, till I got to the top. I felt very miserable, trudging my way up there, and, despite my waterproofs, getting soaking wet. It left off when I reached the summit, and I had a more or less good coast down to the Ashupton, where I fixed up for the night. I say a more or less good glide, because the wind was mostly against me, and the grade was easier coming down. I had thought that I had only about 8 or 9 miles to go from Glossop to Bamford, but owing to that rise, it lengthened out to 13 as far as Ashupton. 20th of July, 1933. I slept well, apart from a little nightmare, to the sound not of traffic, but of a babbling brook away down in the valley. I set off soon after 9:30 and went down through Bamford and Hathersedge, after which came a long climb. Near the top of this pass into the next valley, I took several photos, leaving one on the spool for the crooked spire of Chesterfield Church. After several more ups and downs, I found myself near Holmesfield, and then began a long descent into the plains. While coming through Baslow, I couldn't understand what it was kept flopping at each revolution of my back wheel, and when I investigated, I found a huge blakey sticking out about 1/2 inch from the centre of the tread. I pulled it out, luckily it had only one prong, and got to Chesterfield and had a good lunch. I was dismayed to find on my returning that the rear tyre was flat, so I had to stop near the church and mend it. I found a shady spot, and it didn't take long, as I knew fairly well where it was. I was so distracted with things that I didn't take my picture of the spire, and anyway, it was covered with scaffolding. I left by the Mansfield Road and was accompanied next on the way by a chap about 26 years old, a native of Chesterfield. We had very interesting conversation together, and there is no doubt that when one is alone for hours together, it comes a pleasant change to talk to one's fellow creatures, no matter what their station, even if only to hear one's own voice. We reached Mansfield, a horrible place, though they're scrapping the trams, at about 3 o'clock, and he left me for Nottingham. I kept on for Newark, and had further company for about 2 miles of the journey between Kirtlington and Hockerton, in the shape of an old farmhand. I reached Newark at about 6:30, and, as there was only flat country before me, decided to push on to Lincoln. What a difference in the countryside after Derbyshire. It isn't as flat as a pancake. In fact, I'm ashamed to admit, I had to walk up some of the steeper slopes. It was a bit too far for one day, however, though I forgot the cyclometer reading for this morning, and I was about done by the time I reached Lincoln. I tried to get put up at a place recommended by the handbook, but they were full up. But I finally got put up further down the road by a Mrs. Johnson at number 4 Lucy Tower Street, Lincoln. 21st of July, 1933. Now that I've slept here, I don't think so much of the place. Not that I didn't sleep well, by any means, but simply because I don't like the people. I therefore shall not recommend them to anyone. Having got that out of my mind, I will proceed. Differing from all previous days, I stayed in this town till 2 o'clock, spending the time in seeing the cathedral. I arrived there just before 10, and, as a service was just starting, I attended it. The choir, although not all members were there, was very good, being unaccompanied by the organ, as it was a Friday. There was no reason given for this. After the service, we were taken round the cathedral by a verger, who gave the most interesting commentary upon any cathedral that I have ever heard. It appears he was in the architecture line by profession, and makes it his hobby also, and one could tell he thoroughly appreciated his subject. Unlike most of the people attached to these places, he knew the details of other churches than those of his own. We had a fairly large and very mixed crowd, but they all showed intense interest. One couldn't help it. He asked that if anybody wanted to question him, to speak up and ask and not be at all nervous. While at the cathedral, I became acquainted with a man who had attended the service with me. He was a visitor from Winnipeg, Canada, and after the lecture on the cathedral had finished, we had a cup of chocolate together, and as he had seen me sign my address in the visitor's book as from Plaistow, entered into conversation about it, as about 50 years ago, he had lived at East Ham with his aunt. According to him, High Street South was a country lane, whilst High Street North had a few big houses near the station, but the rest was all market gardens. Afterwards, we went round the cathedral, and I took a few photographs, including one of a Roman gateway that is still standing intact. I left Lincoln just before 2 o'clock and took the Louth Road as far as Rugby, where I brought some cheese biscuits and oranges, and then turned off to Horncastle. As I approached this place, I thought I was getting tired as, do what I might, I couldn't get along on anything but low gear. You may imagine my surprise when, on referring to the map, I found there was actually a rise round Horncastle of over 200 feet. Soon after leaving this place, I encountered some more hills near Ashby and Somersby, and I snapped a view of one of them just to prove that Lincoln is by no means flat. I arrived at Ashford soon after 6 o'clock and fixed up for the night at the Anchor Inn. I can tell I'm approaching the East Coast, as the tea I ate would have sufficed for the whole day yesterday. I spent the evening reading the paper and listening to the men in the bar playing dominoes and darts. Shove Halfpenny, they tell me, doesn't take on at all well here, though they have teams at the game at Louth. 22nd of July, 1933. Quite a change after yesterday's lodgings. Slept comfortably and well. I set off soon after 9:30, having made the best breakfast of my tour so far. I made off towards the coast, which I reached at Skegness at 11 o'clock. It seemed strange to see such a vast concourse of holidaymakers, though no doubt it was greatly augmented by the day trippers. I didn't stop there, only long enough to write a postcard to Mum and Dad and to get some penny stamps. I kept the main road through Wainfleet to Boston and photographed the famous church tower, though I couldn't get far enough away to get a good snap of the whole church at a reasonable angle. I had a ginger beer and ice at a shop and then set off along the Spalding Road, but turned off at Curtin, down some side lanes, most of which had no indication of where they went, until I regained the main road at Fosdyke Bridge. I crossed this and kept on to Holbeach, and then across the fens to Crowland, where I have fixed up for the night. I'll repudiate my statement that Lincoln isn't flat, at least as far as Holland is concerned. Coming through from Holbeach, the roads go as straight and level as a die for anything up to 3 miles. Then they turn and repeat the procedure. No road seems to be straight throughout its length, however. I suppose that is because it had to follow a river before the fens were drained. This place I'm staying at is close to the abbey, where, it will be remembered, Hereward the Wake lies. Before I forget it, I will remind myself that I've written arranging with Mum and Dad that I will be at Claxton on Thursday. I should think that would be all right, as I reckon to get somewhere past Ely tomorrow, and that will leave me Monday to get into Norfolk. 23rd of July, 1933. Got up at 8 and had breakfast and paid my bill, 6 shillings, for bed and breakfast. Still, it's a big hotel. I feel very nervous at staying in such places, though in this case there was no avoiding it unless I went on to Peterborough. Before going off on the bike, I had a look at the abbey, but was disappointed at not seeing either Torfrida or Hereward's graves. I took a time shot of the interior and a snap of the ruins, and that used up the last two on my third roll of film, which was a pity because as it was Sunday, there were no photographic shops open. It was all the more a pity because as I set forth on the bike, I found right in the main street a curious old bridge, very steep and with three approaches, which apparently crossed a stream where it converged with another. I left Crowland and made my way back to March. The sun, which was in my eyes most of the time, simply poured down, and as there is little or no shelter in the way of trees in the fens, I was very thirsty and tired by the time I reached March. However, a couple of ginger beers with ice cream soon put that right, but I couldn't stand that flatness and openness of the fens any longer, so instead of making for Ely, I made in the direction of Wisbeach, at which place I arrived at about 3:30. I pushed on to King's Lynn and was glad to notice I was approaching more wooded country and that the road was rising and falling. Soon after I had bypassed Lynn, it made a pleasant change to have to walk up a short slope. I don't think I shall ever want to go to the Fenland anymore by bike, even though it is top gear riding. I reached Castle Rising at 5:30 and determined to push on to Dersingham, where I have fixed up for tonight. The wind seems to have kept the direction it took yesterday, namely northeast. I have had it mostly against me today. Tomorrow I intend to work up the coast from Hunstanton, about as far as Cromer, and then make off inland so that I shall have plenty of time to get to Claxton on Tuesday. 24th of July, 1933. I set off about 10 o'clock and went through Snettisham to Hunstanton, though I only visited Old Hunstanton, and pressed on through Thornwell, Titchwell and Brancaster, at which place I bought some film. Then I bypassed Burnham Market and arrived at Wells at just after noon. I continued along the Cromer Road, passing through Stiffkey, Blakeney, Clay, Salthouse, despite the way they spell it on the map, there seems to be a T in the name, Weybourne, Sheringham, Runton, and reached Cromer at 3 o'clock. Instead of turning off there, I kept straight on through Overstrand to Sidestrand, and then turned off for North Walsham. From that place, I kept to the Norwich Road almost as far as Coltishall, when I turned off for Wroxham. As it was not yet 7 o'clock, and I wasn't keen on the place, I turned to the handbook and found a cheap place at New Buckenham. And as Buckenham was on my way to Claxton, I determined to put up there. So I sped on through Salthouse, past Plumstead to Blowfield, where I asked the way and discovered to my dismay that New Buckenham was nowhere near Buckenham Ferry, but about 14 or 15 miles the other side of Norwich. I was too far gone to go back then, so I pushed on through Brundle to Buckenham Station, determined to ask the station master if he could put me up, as when Mum and Dad went to Claxton when we were at Cromer last year, he had told them he put people up, but I was disappointed. I saw a porter and he told me that the best place was the Ferry Hotel. This was on the other side of the Yare, so I thought I might as well push on to Claxton. I crossed the ferry at 8:30 and arrived at the rectory at 9:15, nearly dead beat. I reckon I did about 80 miles today. I notched 3,000 near North Walsham and passed my total 600-mile mark 2 miles from Buckenham. 25th of July, 1933. Had a rest for a change and quite enjoyed it. Auntie Lil allowed the boys to have a holiday from school in my honour and they made the most of it. This afternoon we played cricket for a while, but it was a bit too hot, so we all went down to Rockland Broad and had a boat out for 4 hours. After tea we mucked about with the steam engine with as little success as before and then had a few games of table tennis till it got too dark. After supper, we had the maps out and I showed them the route of my tour. You cannot believe how pleased I felt when I heard that Mum and Dad were getting my cards all right. It's like speaking to a microphone, this sending of postcards every day and not being able to get a reply. Mum and Dad sent me a letter card today saying how pleased they were at the prospect of seeing me as I am there and giving me some idea of how to find the place, and I intend going straight there tomorrow. Mum says there's plenty of eats to be had. 26th of July, 1933. I didn't go to Claxton after all today. When I got down to breakfast, Auntie Lil explained that the boys had a half holiday today, so I sent a card to Mum and Dad telling them I would be there tomorrow. I spent the morning reading mostly Modern Boys and a thriller, and in the afternoon we played a little cricket, but it was too hot out of doors, so we did some more reading. In the evening, Dunstan and I played ping pong, but not in the orthodox style, merely smashing the ball as hard as we could, but luckily smashing nothing else. 27th of July 1933. Before I started, I took photographs of the boys and set off about 10:30. I realised when I reached Hellington Corner that I'd left my camera behind, but thought that as Phil and Bill were coming to stay at Plaistow shortly, they would bring it with them. I had good roads right through. I bypassed Norwich at Trowes and came down the main Norwich Road. A few miles beyond Scole, I stopped for refreshment, ginger beer and ice cream, and while there I was offered a lift in a car for a few miles by a man on his way to Wickham Market. I was glad of the opportunity, so we put the bike in the dicky seat, and that took about 6 or 7 miles off my journey. I left him 7 miles from Claydon to resume my ride. In the meanwhile, the sun had gone in behind a huge black cloud bank, and a strong breeze from the southeast, dead ahead, had sprung up and was increasing in velocity. I therefore had a tough time and didn't reach Claydon till 4:30. I was directed to Great Blakenham Lodge by someone at the railway station and met Dad on the way. We were all very pleased to see each other and to tell each other of our experiences and our adventures during the last 12 days. After tea, we went for a walk and I was able to see some of the country round about. It certainly seems very peaceful in this part. The roads, I must say, are well kept and in a great deal better condition than those of Norfolk. 28th of July 1933. We took the bus to Ipswich today and went by train to Felixstowe. It is a quiet place, but very pleasant. We had dinner there and spent the afternoon where, despite the heat of the sun, a strong breeze from the southeast kept us cool. We caught a train back just before 7, and after some long wait at Ipswich, we arrived at Great Blakenham soon after 8:30. A most enjoyable day. 29th of July 1933. The wind was blowing strongly from the southwest again today. We had a short walk around this morning, and after a good dinner, I saw Mum and Dad off on the train for London at 2:50. We made arrangements that, if the weather was all right, I should meet them at Grandma's tomorrow at tea time. Otherwise, I would go straight home. I had the wind, which was strong against me, till I deviated from the main road for Flatford to visit the famous mill. I couldn't see anything to go mad about, but I took a photo of the place, and just after I reached the main road again, I had a sharp shower. I caught the full force of the wind as I was bypassing Colchester. I had decided to work my way along Stane Street, through Braintree, Dunmow and Bishop Stortford, the better to reach Kenton tomorrow, but took the wrong road and landed in Halstead soon after 7:30 and fixed up at the Carpenter's Arms at that town. It is a much larger place than I thought, containing over 5,000 inhabitants. Upon looking at the map tonight, I find I have a long way to go tomorrow. This place is over 40 miles from London, so I'll have to wangle the road somehow to get to Kenton in under 50, because I've got to get back to Plaistow by tomorrow night. 30th of July 1933. Last day. I had a good night's rest and set off just before 10. Went down the Braintree Road and along Stane Street to Bishop Stortford. I didn't arrive there till 12:30, and according to the map, I had still another 40 miles to go to reach Kenton. I pushed on to Ware, passing through Much Haddam, around which there is some very beautiful country, but owing to the heat and still having a strong southwesterly winter face, I didn't get to Ware till 3:00. I therefore decided to go straight home, so I turned down the London Road as far as Broxbourne, where I turned off through Nasing to Waltham Abbey, climbed the hill to High Beech, and thence by the usual route home, arriving there at 6:15. It seems funny to write usual route again after all this time. I haven't taken cyclometer readings for today, but I believed I passed the 3,172 mark in Catherine Road, which makes 750 miles for the whole tour. I've enjoyed my holiday very much, although the first week dragged and the second week flew. If I do go on tour next year, I shall devote more of my time to it and go further afield. I'd like Mum and Dad to see the Peak District, though, and I'm sure they'd like a holiday there. 31st of July, 1933. Wasn't very keen on resuming work again, but I had plenty to occupy myself with, and the time didn't drag so much as I expected. The weather was just the sort one likes to return in. Dull, but not miserable. It is much cooler today, too. The wireless had got itself into an unworkable condition while we were away, but Dad, in trying to adjust it on Saturday night, had put so much bias on the first LF that there was hardly any anode current at all, with consequent distortion. I set that right tonight, and we watered the earth well.